Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Amud Aleph. The Mishnah begins, Ashofech Maim Birshut Rabim, someone who pours out water into the Rishut Rabim, Huzak Bayan Acher, and an individual is injured by that water that was put out in the Rishut Rabim, Chayav Benisko, you're responsible for the damage that is done by the waters that were put out into the Rishut Rabim. Hamatznia Takotz Veta Zuchuchit, this is the part of the Mishnah which we quoted in yesterday's daf, which is the person who goes and puts away. Here, matznia is basically disposal of items that are dangerous. So it's some sort of hazardous waste that you have to put away. So individuals want to put away a kotz and zuchuchit. These are sharp items that they don't want people to be injured by. So they stick them in places where people won't reach them. So one of those options is to put them inside of a wall. The person who puts those items inside of a wall so that other people don't become injured by them. Vagoderet gidro bekotzim, or someone puts up a wall but uses kotzim, barbed wire. Vageder shenafadu reshut rabim, or a wall that falls into the reshut rabim. Vichuzku behen achirin, and other people are injured by any of these items. Chayav v'niskan, he is responsible for the damage that is done. So now on that, we have a qualification of Rav. Amar Rav, loshanu ela dinitanfu kelav b'mayim. That it's only true when his utensils, his clothing, becomes soiled by the water that went out to the Rishut Rabim. Aval hu atzmo patur. But with regards to injury to the individual himself, you are patur, karko olam hezikato. The ground itself is what caused the damage. So, a number of things, one of which is that obviously we're not talking about a case where he's mafkir, the item, because the fact that you see that he's chayav for kelim already shows you that we're not talking about the av of bor, because bor is patur bekelim. So that's number one, is that we're definitely not talking about a case of hefker. Number two, this is Rav Lishitato, Rav who believes that when you hit the ground or the impact on the ground is not something that the individual is responsible for. Therefore, we're going to see a machloket later on in the Masechta between Rav and Shmuel about what you are responsible for with regards to a boar that you dig. Rav says that you're responsible for the hevel. It's the bad air quality that damages the individuals or the items that fall in there, but not the chavata, not the impact with the ground. And then Shmuel says you're also responsible for the impact in the ground. Here, Rav, consistent with his opinion, says that when you hit the ground where that water is, you are not responsible because the impact to the ground is what caused the damage and not your water that caused the damage. Amalei Ravuna, the Rav. So Ravuna says to his Rebbe Rav, Lo yehei ela karif shom. Why is this any different than his zevel, that is garbage or other items that he throws out into Rishut Rabim? If he's not mafkir them, then he's responsible for anything that happens to them. So why is this any different than an instance when he throws garbage out into the Rishut Rabim? So too over here, when we're talking about the damage that's done by the water that he threw out, we're talking about the mixture, the water, the mud, whatever it is that he falls into, the person should be responsible for it. Now, the Balei HaTosafot point out over here that the Gemara is not explaining that the damage done by the water is that you slipped on the water. Rather, that the damage here is impact or damage is actually done by the water. And that he points out for two reasons. One is the previous Mishnah said, Chuchluku b'mayim, that you slipped on the water. Over here it says you got damaged. There was nezek to the water. The second reason is that over here it says hashofech maim. The person threw the water out intentionally into the Rishut Rabim. It's not talking about a case where it simply spilled into the Rishut Rabim and then somebody slipped on it. Here there was clear intent to put it out into the Rishut Rabim in order or for some sort of toilet that he put them out there in the Rishut Rabim. So what Rav Huna is suggesting to Rav is, I don't understand why you're exempting this individual from the damage that's done. His water out in the Rishut Rabim is no different than putting garbage or anything else out in the Rishut Rabim, where you're responsible for whatever happens. If you're not mafkir that item, then you have culpability for any injury or damage that is caused. Why over here are you not responsible for the damage caused by the water, as opposed to saying that it was karko olam hezikato? Says back to Rav Huna, misavart dolo tamu mayo. Oh, you really think that the case here is where the water did not yet either evaporate or absorbed or was absorbed into the ground? Betamumayo. It was a case in which the water was already absorbed into the ground. So, as Rashi explains over here, that once the tamumayo, once they're in the ground, there's no refesh. There's nothing left. I mean, that there's no residual of the water over here. The way the Balei HaTosafot learn is that, not that that's the exclusive case over here, But what Rav is suggesting is that the Mishnah does not differentiate as to whether the water is still extant, or the water has already evaporated or been absorbed into the ground. And so therefore, you can't make this person culpable for, quote-unquote, refesh, for his item being out in the Rishut Rabim, because the way the Mishnah notes it is in a case possibly where the item doesn't exist anymore. The problem is, and this is what the Balei Tosafot point out, Vim Tomar, Vitamu Mayo, if the water has already evaporated or been absorbed into the ground, Stama Mafkir Luhu. And obviously he disowned or gave up ownership over the water because the water no longer has any toelet. It has no benefit to him. There's no utility in the water. So it's very hard to understand what's happening here. If you say that the water's already disappeared, then first of all, what exactly are you culpable for over here? Because you have no intent of keeping this water or keeping this item. So why would you even think that you should be chayav over here? You retain no residual ownership in the item, and the item itself has completely disappeared. Therefore, the Tosafot makes a suggestion favoring an alternate girsa, which actually reverses the items over here. So he says that, Ihavagaris ipcha havanecha. If the girsa was just the opposite, it would have been a lot nicer, easier to understand this Gemara, which is, Misavart de tamumaya v'nichnesu be'afar v'nasu tit. You think that the water is gone already, meaning that the water has already been absorbed into the ground and made into mud. So therefore, you're worried about this being like refesh. No, the case is de lo tamumayo. The water has yet to be absorbed into the ground, and that the water is still mayim tzluvim. It's still good water over there. The mistama lo afkarinu. So that's the reason why he has not been mafkir them, because the water still has utility to him, because the water still sits separate from the dirt or the mud that is there. So you thought this was like refesh, like zevel, like garbage that's been thrown out into the Rishut Rabim, and you should be responsible. And he says, no, the water is separate or segregated from the ground. And for that reason, you still have an interest in the water, and you wouldn't be mafgirit. And number two is you also won't be responsible for the damage that is done, because the impact of the damage done to the individual is from his hitting the ground, nothing to do with the water that was there. The Tosafot favors that alternate girsa in order to overcome some of the problems that arise with the girsa that we have in front of us. Mar says, "Vetarte lamali." What do I need two mishnayot to discuss this same matter, which is that the fact that you are chayav when you put things out into the Rishut Rabim, meaning that the mishnah before that says when you slip on the water, that you're responsible for the damage that happened. And Rav over there says that the Mishnah is talking about a case where you were not mafgirit, and therefore you're responsible for the tinuf kelim. And our Mishnah as well, Rav claims that the case of Shavich Mayim Rishut Rabim is where he wasn't mafgirit, he's responsible for the damage that happens to the kelim. So why do I need two Mishnayot, according to the way that Rav is explaining it, to tell me the exact same information? Where it says, Chada bimota chama, v'chada bimota kshamim. I'm going to teach you that the din is equally applicable in the summer as it is in the winter. And this is something that we saw earlier in the Masechta, the Tanya. Kol elu shamru putkim bivotehem. That all these people, all these, meaning all these instances where the Chachamim gave you permission to do such a thing, which is that you're allowed to open out your, basically, sewer into the Rishut Rabim. Vigorfim ma'arutehem bimota chama. And they washed out or swept out their caves in the summertime. Ein lahem reshut. In that case, I'm sorry, vigorfim arutehem, and that they swept out their caves or cleaned them out. Bimota chama, ein lahem reshut. If you do this in the summertime, it's without permission. The reason being that in the summertime, the roads dry up, and therefore the roads are both fixed and passable. If you put water now into the Rishut Rabim, you cause problems for all the individuals that are trying to traverse the Rishut Rabim. So you're actually ruining the road when you do that, and therefore you don't have permission to dump your sewer water or clean out your caves into the Rishut Rabim. Now then, Bimota Gshamim, we're talking about the rainy season, the winter time, Yesh Lahem Rishut. You have permission to put the water into Rishut Rabim because in essence, you're not doing anything that's not already there. The rain has already caused the roads to deteriorate. There is a water out on the roads anyway, so your addition of the water that you're putting out there does nothing more, is not incremental in causing detriment to the Rishut Rabim. But nevertheless, afal pishu b'shut, even though you have permission to do it, imeziku chayavin l'shalim. If it does damage or people are injured by those items, then you are responsible for it. So you do it at your own risk, which is you do have permission to do it, but you are responsible for it. But here you see a distinction between the summertime and the wintertime, which is in the summertime, you don't have permission to put it out there. So you might have thought that the Mishnah is talking about summertime, and that's why you're obligated, that's why you're responsible. So the second time, or the next Mishnah, tells you that's not only in the summertime, it's also in the wintertime. In the wintertime, too, even though you have permission to put it out there, you're still responsible for the damage that happens. And that's why I need two Mishnayot to tell me the same thing, that water that you put out into the Reshut Rabim, that is a cause of damage, you are responsible for that damage, whether it's done Birshut in the wintertime or whether it's done without Birshut in the summertime. And so now we move on in the Mishnah, and again we quote something that we saw yesterday's daf, Amatzniyat Takotz, the case of the barbed wire fence, where if you put it next to the Reshut Rabim and people are injured by that, that you are responsible for the damage that happens. So we had the qualification yesterday in the daf of Rabbi Yochanan. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, lo shanu elo b'mafriach. That's only true when they are protruding or juxtaposed adjacent to the Reshut Rabim, because there you're putting the harm in the way of the people of the Reshut Rabim or where they normally walk. Aval mim tzamtzeim, if you back the wall up into your own property, in essence, you give up of your own property to put up the fence, and you give additional room to the Reshut Rabim, lo, or the other gifts is patur, there you're not responsible for it. My time of patur, why are you not responsible in that case? It's not normal behavior for people to bump up against the walls or to rub up against walls. So therefore, if you pull it into your own property, then you've taken the proper precautions to give people sufficient room in the Reshut Rabim to do whatever they normally do without being injured by your barbed wire or the sharp fence that you put up over there. And so in that case, you are patur. On the other hand, if you put it adjacent to the Reshut Rabim, then you haven't given sufficient ground for the people in the Reshut Rabim to function without coming into contact with the sharp items that you are allowing to protrude or be up against the Reshut Rabim, and there you'll be chayav for that behavior. That is the qualification of Rabbi Yochanan that we saw yesterday. The obvious nafkaminot might be, for instance, when animals which do normally bump up against walls, it might not help that you pull the wall back into your own property there, because the animals will bump up against the wall, whether it's adjacent to Reshut Rabim or whether you pull back into your own property. So there you might be responsible. On the other hand, based on the Gemara yesterday, we saw there's another possibility as to why you are chayav in the case of where it's adjacent to Reshut Rabim. It's not because you have sharp items and people normally bump up against them or they don't have sufficient room to move in, but rather you're chayav because of what Rabbi Yochanan says, that you're not to be mafkir nizakav the Reshut Rabim. You're not to be mafkir things that are injurious in the Reshut Rabim. You're still responsible for those items, even if you mafkir, even if you disown them. And that might be make you culpable over here. If that's the case, then obviously the nafkamina, again, would be behema, would be the animal. Because in the case where you put it up against the Reshut Rabim, or you're using the area of the Reshut Rabim, and you're a quote-unquote mafkir, you're putting your injurious fence or sharp items right up against the Reshut Rabim, and you're mafkir the nizakim there you would be responsible for that which takes place. Okay, but if you pull back into your own property, then you're not responsible because you're not being mafkir nizakav. You're retaining ownership over it and you're doing it on your own property, and that is mutar. And so therefore, if the animals would bump up against it, you would not be responsible. So depending how you explain the reasoning behind Rabbi Yochanan in the Maskana, would it be enough gamina for animals bumping up against the wall when you pull the wall back into your own property? Now the Gemara continues. Tarabanan. Hamatznia kotzotav uzechuchiotav l'toch kotel shel chaveiro. Again, here a person is trying to dispose of his sharps. He has to put them in a place where people are not going to be injured or hurt by them. And he sticks them into a wall. I mean, the walls were made out of stones. There were gaps in the wall. Those spaces in the stones allowed for people to store things there. Both for security reasons, they would store valuables there, but also they would store things like this here, which were, quote-unquote, hazardous waste that they had to get rid of, that they don't want people to be injured by. So there, they put them into the wall. Ubabala kotel v'satar kotlo. The owner of the wall comes and takes down the wall. V'nafal l'reshut rabim. Then these items that were hidden away in the wall then are exposed, and they are in the reshut rabim. V'ziku, and they cause damage. Chayav ha-matznia. The one who hid them there, the one who put them in the wall, is responsible for that. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan qualifies and it says, Loshana ele bekotel ra'ua. That's only true if when he put him in there, the wall was already questionable in its integrity, because then the person who put them there should have at least anticipated the possibility that the wall would be taken down. It's not that the wall is collapsing at this moment. It's not that the wall needs to be taken down immediately, but rather there is a possibility that you could foresee in the future that this wall might need to be removed. If that's already foreseeable, or that is a possibility at the time you put it in there, then you are responsible for the fact that you put them in there, because you could have anticipated the possibility that someone would take this wall down, and then your items would be exposed in their shut or beam. Ava bikoto bari, when you're talking about a healthy wall, meaning a wall that there's no reason to believe that this wall would be taken down or this wall would be changed in any matter. Hamatznia patur, the person who hit them there is patur. V'chayav balakotel, and the owner of the wall is responsible for anything that happened. Again, Rashi over here says the reason that the owner of the wall is responsible, because he is mishani. He's doing something that is unusual or something that is unexpected by taking down the wall, number one. Number two is he should have anticipated, or he should have thought of the possibility that people put things in the wall. And so therefore, because both the fact that he does something that is unanticipated and the fact that he should have considered the possibility that people put things in the wall, therefore, he is responsible for all the outcomes that come about. The Baal HaTosafot asks, why doesn't the person who's taking down the weak wall also have the same responsibility? I mean, that he knows at some point the wall was a good wall. And if the wall was once a good wall, people probably put things in there, not anticipating him taking it down. So when he does take it down, why don't we make him responsible for the fact that he's taking the wall down and should consider the fact that people might, in a long time ago, put things in the wall? The Baal HaTosafot rejects suggesting that the wall was ra'ua mi'ikaro, that it was always a weak wall. Because then he doesn't have to think about it, because nobody should have put things in there knowing or anticipating that the wall was taken down. Tosafot says you do not have to say that. You can even speak about a case where the wall originally was a stronger wall. Nevertheless, the Baal HaKotel over here is not responsible, because the individual who put the items in there is yoter of a posheya. He's more negligent in his behavior. So if we're trying to assign culpability based on who is more negligent over here, the case by the Kotel Ra'ua, the more negligent party is the person who stored the items in the wall when the wall was already of a weaker state, versus the owner of the wall who you're asking to anticipate or consider the possibility that years and years ago, somebody put something in the wall, which could have already disintegrated, could have already been lost or not exist anymore. And therefore, we say that the person who's more negligent over here is the party that stuck them in when the wall was weaker. And that's why in the case of Kotel Ra'ua, we put the obligation or culpability on the individual who stored the items there. Whereas by the Kotel Bari, in the wall that is a strong and secure wall, we put the burden on the individual who takes the wall down rather than the parties that store them over there. Amar Ravina. Ravina says, from what we just learned here, Zoto Merit, we can conclude the following, or we can extrapolate the following. Hamichaseb Baro, person who opens up a manhole, opens up a cistern in the Rishut Rabim, but then covers it up, Bidilyo Shel Chaveiro, with his friend's bucket. So yes, he dug the bore, he created this obstacle, this problem that could cause injury, but at the same time, he covered it properly. But the covering that he used did not belong to him, it belonged to his friend. Unbeknownst to his friend, he borrowed his friend's bucket and stuck it in there to cover up the bore. Ubabal Dili, the owner of the bucket, comes along, Vinatal Dilio, and he took his bucket back because he says, this guy never had permission to take it, I'm taking my bucket back. Chayav Balabor. Now the cistern or this manhole is exposed, and people can be injured in this bore. Who is responsible for that? Is it the Baal HaBor, the one who dug the bore? Or is it the Baal HaDli, the owner of the bucket, who's the one who exposed this obstacle or created the possibility that somebody could be injured by the bore? So here the Ravina says, from our Gemara, it makes it clear that the responsible party is the Baal HaBor. Just like in the case of the wall, we say the person who was Matznia, who put the items there, is responsible. So too over here, the one who dug the bore is the one responsible. I mean, the one who put the objects that are problematic in the situation, they are the one responsible for the damage that happens. So So even though those objects were protected by the wall until this point in time, nevertheless, when the wall comes down, the person who put those objects there is responsible for them. So to over here, even though the bore was covered when he finished digging it, nevertheless, he used someone else's property to cover it up. When that property is removed, he will be responsible for whatever happens. The Gemara says, Pshita. Ravina's statement is so obvious. I mean, that is a clear extrapolation or conclusion that you would draw from the previous statements that were made in the Gemara. Why do you need Ravina to tell you this? It's so similar in nature to the case that we said before. Is he even giving us new information or a chidush that we didn't have known otherwise? So Mahuda Tema, the Gemara says, yes, there is a possibility that you would have thought differently over here. Hatamhu Dolavayadalay Dolodei. Over there, he didn't know about it to warn him. Avalhocha Diyadalay Havaleodie. Over here where he does know, maybe he should have to give him the information or warn him. Kamash Malan, that's not the case. Meaning that in the case of the wall, when the individual takes down the wall, and then he finds these objects that are there that fall into the Reshut HaRabim, he has no idea who put them there, and he might not even know who is the owner of these items that are now in the Reshut HaRabim. So there we say the owner of the item is responsible because the owner of the wall has no way of informing the individual whose objects they are that they are now exposed in the Reshut HaRabim and can cause damage. On the other hand, over here, where the individual is taking his bucket back and exposing the bore, he knows, or the Gemara supposes, that he knows who dug the bore. And therefore, maybe there's an obligation upon him to inform the Bala bore that he's pulling the cover off, that he's taking the bucket away. So maybe we would make him responsible for that, or the fact that he didn't tell him means that he is responsible for whatever happens until the Bala bore knows that his bore is exposed. Kamash Malan, no, the Kamash Malan over here, according to Rabbeinu Hananel, is the Kevan de Shokel Didei Lochayish Libira de Chavere. Since he's just taking back his own possessions, he doesn't have to worry about his friend's bore. I mean that he has no responsibility to this individual because he's simply taking back what belongs to him. That is the bucket that this individual placed into the bore. On the other hand, Rashi explains the Kamash Malan in the following manner, which is that these cases are identical and there is no obligation on the owner of the bucket to inform the Bala bore that he's taken his bucket back because he never had permission to put the bucket there. And then the Bala of the Dli doesn't have any responsibilities to the Bala bore, just like the Bala Kotel, the owner of the wall, has no responsibilities to the individuals who stuck their items inside of his wall. The nafkamina between the two reasons would be in a case where a third party takes the bucket out. According to Rabbeinu Hananel, maybe in that instance, the person who pulled the bucket out would be responsible because he's not just taking back his own possession. Whereas according to Rashi, in that instance, maybe the Bala bore would still be chayav because the major problem or the major issue here is that the Bala bore put something out in the Reshut HaRabim that is problematic and he didn't properly cover it. Because he took something that belonged to someone else, and he can anticipate that that individual is going to take it back. And whether it's that individual or someone else that takes it back, he should have anticipated the fact that the bore would be uncovered, and he is responsible. And in that case, the third party that takes it off would not be responsible, according to Rashi. So according to Rabbeinu Hananel, maybe they would be responsible. Now, Tan Rabbanan is a very famous braita. We mentioned in passing some things along or akin to this in the introduction to Baba Kama. Jiz Chasidim Harishonim Hayu Matznim Kotzotehem Vizichuchiyotehem B'toch Sadudehem U'mamikim Lehem Gimel Tvachim Kadesh Lo Yakev HaMachresha. That the Chasidim Harishonim, in order to take great care that nobody should be injured by these items, they used to hide or put away. Again, whether this is disposal or storage, it seems more like disposal. They used to put their sharp pieces of glass and their kotzim, the thorns or sharp items, they used to bury them in their fields for safekeeping. And they used to make sure that when they did so, they went to a depth of more than 3 tefachim. So that when the field is plowed, the plow would not turn over these items and bring them to the surface. So in order to ensure that these items are not going to become problematic, are not going to injure other parties, these individuals took the following precautions. They took them out of circulation by putting them into the ground. But not only did they put them into the ground, they took the extra step of putting them deep enough in the ground. So not only were they out of circulation, but the normal functioning or use of this area would not expose them, which means that if the area was plowed, the plow would not pick them up or bring them up from down below because they were deep enough that the plow wouldn't have reached that area. So that's what the Chassidim HaRishonim used to do. So Rav Sheshet, Shadiluhu Benura, Rav Sheshet, as an alternative, used to throw them into the fire. So again, here, you were asked before whether this was for storage or disposal. Here it clearly seems that he's putting them in there to dispose of them. So he put them into the fire where people wouldn't go because since it was hot and the fire itself would dispose of them or ruin them. Therefore, he put them into the fire so that nobody would become injured by them. Rava shot a little bit diglat. Rava used to throw them into the Tigris River. That's an interesting issue back in their time. It's obviously a cause for many health issues. But the river was used or had a dual purpose, or even more than a dual purpose. The river was used for bathing in. The river was used for dumping your sewage and your garbage into it. And the river was also used for drinking water or for feeding the fields. So over here, Rava's solution is to dump it into the river, although that's an interesting solution only because people enter the river in order to do other things like bathe or wash their clothing. So throwing them into the river, why does that help? The assumption being that the river has a flow or a current, and it's going to take these items and wash them away, whereby which they will not cause damage to the individuals who are working in that area. Obvious problem is that downriver, it could affect people. So this is a problem that causes or is a cause for great health issues and other issues in their time. But that was when Rava disposed of it, basically put it into the garbage, where he assumed that people would not become injured by it. I'm Rav Yehuda. If you want to be a chassid, over here a chassid does not mean like today, the way that it's used in the colloquial sense, but chassid over here means that someone who acts lifnei meshurat hadin or takes extra precaution or care with the guards to kiyum ha-mitzvot, the kayim milei de nezikin. He should keep the dinim of nezikin, meaning that a chassid is someone who keeps nezikin. Rava Amar Milei Davot. Rava says, you want to be a chosid, you should keep Milei Davot. Most people assume the meaning of avot over here means Pirkei Avot. There are some that suggest that the avot over here literally means our forefathers. V'amrilo Milei Debrachot. And some say that it means the Milei Debrachot, the keeping the issues of Brachot. The question is, what is going on here in the Gemara? Both from the perspective of the three examples that are brought here, to be a chassid, you should keep milei denezikin, or milei davot, or milei debrachot. And it's not clear here that they're mutually exclusive. It might be that they are all true. So what is the common denominator, or the factor that joins these three items that the Gemara over here says that that makes you into a chassid, or that's an area where you should take extra precaution, and one should act with nimishir tadin, and be careful in the mitzvot. So the Rashba over here suggests that it's simply a wording issue, which is that in each of these masechtot, there is a quote in the Mishnayot that involves chassidim. So over here, the Rashba says, our case in the Gemara here, right before we quote it in the Braita, chassidim arishonim ayu matznim kotzutehem. So there is an instruction or a mention of chassidim with regards to milei denezikin. In the Mishnah Navot, it says, omer shuli, shelcha, mishelcha, shelcha, chassid. So again there, concept of chassid arises within the context of the Mishnayot in Avot. And in Brachot, we have in the fourth parak, chassidim arishonim ayu shoim sha'achat umitpalalim. It says there that the chassidim arishonim, when they used to get up, they used to sit for an hour beforehand in preparation for davening. So in each of these scenarios or mesechtot, you have an instruction, whether it's a Mishnah or a Braita, that tells you the chassidim arishonim used to have a certain practice in these areas. And that is the common denominator between them. That's what the Rashba says. The Rashba says that seemingly the connection is not something that has to do with thematic connection, but simply a word connection or the usage of the term chassid or chassidim ha-rishonim. On the other hand, the Meshech Chochma in his parish on Chumash with regards to the parish on Shema, over there he says that the three items that mentioned here are akin to the three items that are mentioned in the pasuk of V'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol meldecha. He says b'chol levavcha. What does it mean to worship Hashem with all your heart? Heyot mihaino milei debrachot. That is keeping brachot. V'hitbonein ulakir shekol devar nivra ayidei mi shamar v'ayah olam. That person should take heed pay attention, be conscious of the fact that Hashem created everything. The Gemara in Brachot in the sixth parak tells us that if a person doesn't make a bracha and he's nene me'olam hazeh, if he's stealing from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that making a bracha is an acknowledgement or recognition of what Hashem has done, and therefore that's worshiping Hashem b'chol devavcha. And then he says b'chol nafshecha is neged milei davot, to worship Hashem with all your soul. That has to do with Pirkei Avot. Shemavuar Hashem tchunot umidot ha-nefesh. Because there it explains the character traits and the proper way one should conduct himself and how he can cleanse himself, improve himself, and that is b'chol nafshecha. And then b'chol me'odecha, with all your possessions, that is what's mentioned here, milei denizikin. That's the way that the Meshech Chochma explains or thematically connects between these three different items. The Maharal, in explaining, in the Chidushei Agadot, in explaining this Gemara, the common denominator between these three items, says that these are three areas in which an individual needs to improve or focus on in order to be shalem, to bring about a shleimut. He says that each of these items represents one area of Avodat Hashem. And that is, Milei Denizikin represents Ben Adam Lechaveron. So there, to be a chassid, you have to excel in Ben Adam Lechaveron. Milei Da'avot is something that is Ben Adam Le'atzmo. That's about self-improvement. That's about character, about morals, those types of issues. And therefore, a person has to focus, in terms of being Bishleimot, on himself and on improving himself. Milei De'brachot is Ben Adam Le'makom. And that is the three areas of Avoda, which is that we have Ala Torah, Ala Avodah, Ala Gemilut Chasadim. So the idea of Torah, Milei Da'avot, self-improvement. Ala Avodah, which is Ben Adam Lamakom, or Milei De'brachot. And Gemilut Chasadim, which is the Ben Adam Lechaverot, and Zikin over here. And therefore the Maharal sees in these three items, the Shlemut Ha'adam. I would suggest it's a little bit of a mixture between the Meshech Chochma, the Maharal, with a little twist to it, that all of these items require the individual to step out of themselves or to acknowledge someone else. And that's why they focus on this idea of chassid, which is these are people who have to act not like people act in general, but against the grain. And that is that many times when it comes to monetary matters, people are always more careful about their own money or their own material possessions than they are about other people's material possessions or money. Over here, the Gemara clearly says that if you want to be a chassid, then you worry about milei denizikin, that you take extra precaution or you treat other people's property the way that you think about your own property. I mean, treat other people's money the way that you would want to treat your own or the way that you do treat your own money. And that is why you're a chassid. If you want to be a chassid, is to focus on other people's rights and other people's possessions. When it comes to milei davot, when it comes to musar, tochacha, character traits, people are always apt to find the faults in the other party. They always see that which is negative or that which needs improvement in other parties. They're very unlikely to see it in themselves. And so therefore, the milei davot, to be a chassid, is to focus on your own character. It means that the way that you look at others, and the way that you see the problems and the issues that others have, and you are sometimes quick to correct them, or you point out or acknowledge their faults, that's the way that one should treat themselves. The chassid takes care of milei davot and does that on a personal level. He looks at himself rather than at other parties. Milei debrachot is, as we said before, it's the ultimate form of acknowledgement or saying thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is that brachot are a quintessential acknowledgement of the fact that I have to say thank you, I rely on others, and especially a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And a person in general will avoid having to say thank you, or avoid, in a sense, saying brachot, because that means that they're acknowledging their limitations and their reliance upon others. And therefore, to be a chassid, one has to step out of themselves again and acknowledge their limitations and acknowledge the fact that they are dependent on others. And that's why all of these are midut de chassidut, which is that they go against the natural grain or the natural behaviors of the individual. So in order to be a chassid, one has to take up these matters. And I would say that in all of the cases, when we mentioned all these different explanations, that milei denizikin comes first. The issues of ben adam lechaveiro are paramount and first, which is derech eretz kadma l'torah, where the Ramban l'torah in numerous places notes that the civil laws, parshat mishpatim, is a prerequisite to kabbalat haTorah. One cannot have Kabbalat HaTorah, one cannot have a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu unless they have perfected or have a basis of ben adam lechaviro. And therefore, milei denizikin comes before the milei davot and milei debrachot. And again, milei debrachot, in essence, is the last of these items, which is that in order to have the proper ben adam lemakom, you need all these prerequisites, which is both the ben adam lechaviro and ben adam leatzmo, in order to properly approach Hashem and have a true relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. All right, so now the Gemara moves on to the next Mishnah. Hamotzia tivno v'kasho l'rishut rabim. Person who puts his straw or the sheaves from his grains out in the rishut rabim. The reason to do this is lizvalim, as though they get crushed and stepped on in the rishut rabim, which is a means of processing them to make them into fertilizer that he can use then in his fields if they are crushed underfoot. Someone was damaged or injured by that which he put out in the Rishut Rabim. He is responsible for the damage that was created. And whoever takes them first takes possession of them, which seemingly means that they are hefker. Whether that's because the person made them hefker or whether Beit Din imposes hefker is not clear. We'll see that in the Gemara. Anybody who does something to the detriment of the status quo in Rishut Rabim, they ziku, and they cause damage by doing so, chayavim l'shalem, they are responsible for the damage caused by the ruinous activities that they took in the Rishut Rabim. Cholakodem hem zacha. Anybody who gets there first and takes the item is entitled to the item. It's not clear here what exactly Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is arguing on the Tanakhama. It's clear that he disagrees or differs from the Tanakhama. It's not clear in which way or how. Rashi over here speculates, gives two lishonot as to how he's arguing on the Tanakhama, one of which is based on the Gemara that's coming up, so I won't mention it, but the difference is what the penalty is or how much penalty there is for putting out the Rishut Rabim. The Lishna Achrina is the other alternative, is Rabbi Shimon Galil's addition over here is even if you have permission to put them out there, you still are responsible for the damage, and we still penalize you by confiscating the property. This next part of the Mishnah we quoted yesterday's Gemara, Hofechet Agalal, someone who is turning over fertilizer in the Rishut Rabim, and someone else is injured by that zevel, that dung that was put out in the Rishut Rabim, Chayav Benisko. Is responsible for the damage that happened in that instance. Lema matznitin delok Rav Yehuda. Let us suggest that our Mishnah is clearly not authored by Rav Yehuda. Titanyo, we have a brayta further on in Masechta, Rav Yehuda Omer. B'shat hotzat zvalim, at the time where it's normal for people to put dung out into the Rishut Rabim, Adam motzi zvalo the Rishut Rabim, person is allowed to take his dung and put it on the Rishut Rabim, it's ovro koshloshim yom, and they can pile it up every 30 days or so, meaning that he can regather it and concentrate it so that people step on it and crush it underfoot. So he's allowed to do that every 30 days. In order to facilitate the ability of the dung to be crushed underfoot by people and animals that are traversing that area. Not that you have a right to do this, but this is a social contract between individuals that Yoshua, when he gave the land, said there's certain principles or basic rights that we're going to give to people, even though there's no technical entitlement to this. Nevertheless, everybody wants to do it, and it's to the benefit of all parties. Therefore, we're going to grant you the right to do it. So that's what it means here, that Yoshua said that people cannot be makpid on other people acting in this manner. So from Rabbi Yehuda, it makes it sound like you have permission to put your dung out into the Rishut Rabim. And even so much so that Yoshua bin Nun made that part of the social contract of the individuals who came into the land of Israel. So our Mishnah, which says that when you put your items out in the Rishut Rabim, you're responsible for the damage done, Rabbi Yehuda clearly doesn't seem to agree with that. It says, Afilu Tamer Rabbi Yehuda, Mode Rabbi Yehuda, Shemizik, Mishalim. Rabbi Yehuda never addresses this issue, which our Mishnah does, which is that if damage was done from the activities that you undertook, are you responsible? And that's what the Gemara now is suggesting, is that yes, Rabbi Yehuda believes you have permission to do it, but that doesn't necessarily exempt you from culpability or responsibility in this case. And therefore he could reconcile with our Mishnah, because he would believe also that if damage was done because of your activities, you would be responsible. And that is the Mode Rabbi Yehuda, Shemizik Mishleim, Hashizik. Vatanan. Is that really true? We have the Mishnah that says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, B'ner Chanukah patur, b'nei shu birshut. We had this earlier, we're going to have it later on in the Masechta, that in the case of the Gamal that's loaded with Pishtan, that goes by the store that has the candle outside, over there the Mishnah noted that if the candle was outside because it was near Chanukah, then it's the problem of the Bala Gamal, because the Chanvani had permission to put the candle outside. So you see that from that, that Rabbi Yehuda believes when you have permission to do something, not only is that permission to do it, it also exempts you from responsibility. So just like by Ner Chanukah, you were exempted because you had a right to put it out there. So to over here, your right to put it out there should allow you or exempt you from any responsibility. My love, Mishum Rishut Beit Din. What does it mean that he has permission to put the Ner Chanukah out? I mean that Beit Din granted him the right to do the mitzvah b'persume nisa, to accomplish the mitzvah in that manner, and therefore he has a right to do it. So if that's the case, then the same should be true in the case of the Zevel that Rabbi Yehuda brought down. It says, lo, mishum reshut mitzvah. Now over there, the reshut is not simply the reshut of Beit Din, it's the reshut of Beit Din because that is the way to do the mitzvah. So it's not solely that Beit Din gave you permission, it's Beit Din gave you permission to do the mitzvah because the mitzvah needs to be done in that way. So when you have a combination of permission from Beit Din as well as an obligation of the mitzvah, there you'll be exempt. In our case, by the Zevel, where you only have reshut Beit Din, but you don't have the reshut of mitzvah, then you wouldn't gain that exemption. Rabbi Yehuda would agree that you are responsible for damage that happened. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, B'ner Chanukah Patur, Mipnei Shu Reshut Mitzvah. So we have it explicit that the reason or the reshut, the permission that you have here, is not simply the reshut of Beit Din, but the reshut of the mitzvah, the performance of the mitzvah in its proper form, demands that you do it out in the public thoroughfare. Tashma, Kol Elu Shamru Mutarim, the Kakel B'Shut Rabim. All of these items that we said that you have permission to do and ruin the Reshut Rabim, im iziku chayavim l'shalem. If they do damage, then you are responsible for the damage that's done. This is similar to the Braita that we quoted before, which is kol elu shamru potkim bivilotehem gorfim marutehem. We have permission to do that in the wintertime. Even though you have permission, you're responsible for any injuries that come about because of your activities. But there we have, this is a position that's brought in the Braita, and Rabbi Yehuda argues on it. Rabbi Yehuda poter. Rabbi Yehuda is explicit that he does not believe that is true. And from here you see that Rabbi Yehuda does not subscribe to what our Mishnah says, that when damage is done, if you have permission to do it, you are not responsible. Our Mishnah says, even though you have permission to do it, you're still responsible for damage that takes place. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda believes that if you have permission, you are not responsible for the damage. And that's what we're saying here, that Rabbi Yehuda certainly cannot be the author of our Mishnah. Amar Rav Nachman, Matnitan Shlo B'Shat Tutzat Zvalim. It's very simple. We can reconcile between Rabbi Yehuda and our Mishnah. Depends on the time of year. Rabbi Yehuda only made a statement, B'shat Zvalim, at the time that people normally put out their dung into the Reshut Rabim. In that case, when you put it out with permission, you are not held culpable for damage that is done. On the other hand, our Mishnah speaks about a case where it's not Shat Zvalim. It's not the time that you have permission to put out the dung into the Reshut Rabim, and therefore you're held responsible for putting it out into the Reshut Rabim. And in that manner, you could reconcile between Rabbi Yehuda and our Mishnah. He says that Matznit and Shlo B'Shat Tatzat Tevelim, Rabbi Yehuda, and it's still authored by Rabbi Yehuda. Ravashi Amar, Ravashi, on the other hand, suggests that Tivno V'Kasho Tznan, that our Mishnah mentions Tevin and Kash, Mishum De Masriki, because they are slippery and they are more apt to cause damage. Which means that there's a difference between Zebel and Tevin and Kash. That by Tevin and Kash, which have properties of being slippery, over there you're putting a dangerous item or an obstacle out into the Reshut Rabim that is likely to cause damage. So there where you have permission to put them out, we're going to hold you responsible for any damage that takes place. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda, when he says that you're allowed to put the Zevel out, and when you put that Zevel out, you're not responsible for injuries that come about because of that Zevel, that is because Zevel is not easy to slip on, or it's not as obviously injurious or problematic in the Reshut Rabim. And so the distinction we'll make is it depends on the materials that you're putting out in the Reshut Rabim. If you're putting out materials in the Reshut Rabim that don't really change much the nature or character of the Reshut Rabim, it's already a dirt road, it's already a mess out there, and you're putting out Zevel with that, you haven't really changed it much. On the other hand, when you put Tevin and Kash out there, you're changing the dynamic by making it much more slippery. And over there, we're going to make you responsible, even though you have permission to do it. And in that way, we can distinguish between the Mishnah here, where we would say you are responsible, despite the fact that you have Reshut, Whereas the Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda comments on with regards to Zvalim, where you do have Rishut, and you're also exempted because of that permission that is given to you. And then Tosfot says over here, Vahad Mechayev Matnitin Biglalim. But then, what are you going to do with the latter piece of our Mishnah? The end of our Mishnah says that when you put Galal out into the Rishut Rabim, that you are responsible for the damage that happens. If you're making this distinction, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's a difference between Zevel and Tevin and Kash. Why is it that by Glalim, when you turn them over in the Rishut Rabim, that you're responsible for the damage that happens? So Balei Tosafot add an additional dimension over here, which is that in order to get permission to put something into Rishut Rabim, there has to be some utility to you for putting it in the Rishut Rabim. That means that when you put it out there, the walking on it or the processing of it by people walking and stomping on it is beneficial. And therefore, we give you permission to put it out there despite the risks because of the utility or the upside that you have from putting it on the Rishut Rabim. So that means when you put Tevin and Kash out there, it's a risky endeavor, but people do it because it processes the Tevin and Kash. So there, we're trying to balance between those two items. On the other hand, when it comes to Galal, which Tosafot notes over here, we're going to see this in the Gemara upcoming, Rashi notes it as well, that with regards to Galal, there's no reason to put it out in the Rishut Rabim because there's no benefit that's garnered, meaning that the Galal is ready to be used as it is, and you putting it in the Rishut Rabim and processing it doesn't make it any better. And therefore, your placement of it in the Rishut Rabim is for no utility. And if there's no utility, then you really don't have permission to put it out there. And that's why at the end of the Mishnah, you'll be held accountable for it, despite the fact that normally by Zevel and Tevin and Kash you have permission to put it out here, by Galal you do not have permission because there's no benefit in having people walk on it. There's three different categories. There's Zevel, Kash and Tevin, and Glalim. So by Zevel and Kash and Tevin, there is a value to having it be walked on. Kash and Tevin are more dangerous because they're slippery. The Zvalim are not slippery, so they're less dangerous. Galal is a totally different category where there's no benefit at all putting it out there. So there's actually three different categories. Right now, the Mishnah says, Kol HaKodem Behem Zacha. That once person puts these items out to the Rishut Rabim, the parties of the Rishut Rabim are given permission to take them. Amarav, Ben Begufan, Ben Vishvachan. When we say that you have the right to take these items, that is both the principle as well as the benefit that is garnered from placing them out in the Rishut Rabim. Viziri Amar Bishvachan Avalo Begufan. You're allowed to take the benefit that is generated from them being out in the Rishut Rabim. What you're not allowed to take is the goof, the item. The item itself, you're not allowed to confiscate or take away. But my Kamiflagay, what does their machloket revolve around? Rav Savar Kansu Gufan Mishum Shvachan. Rav says, because of the benefit that you garner by putting them out in Rishut Rabim, so we definitely should penalize you for that benefit because we want you to desist from that type of behavior. So we penalize you. You are only should be penalized for the benefit that you gain. But once we're already penalizing you for the benefit, we also penalize you by taking away the keren. So that not only is it a net zero to you, it's actually a loss to you to put it out in the Rishut Rabim. And that way we can dissuade you or discourage you from putting it out in the Rishut Rabim. On the other hand, Ziri Savar, Lo Kansu Gufan Mishun Shvachan. Ziri says, we're not going to penalize the goof or the karen, the principal amount, for the benefit that you garner, meaning that that which you benefit in Rishut Rabim, we're going to take away. By taking that away, that's enough of a reason for people not to put it in the Rishut Rabim because they're not going to gain anything. All that gain is going to be taken away by others. And the reason that Ziri agrees or thinks that we do penalize you by the Shevach is either because the Isur of putting it out in the Rishut Rabim, that benefit that is garnered from the Isur is the Shevach. So we confiscate from you the Shevach, which was the part or the item that was generated through the Isur that was undertaken. Or we say that the fact that the Rabim walks on it generates that Shevach, then by definition it doesn't really belong to you. It's something that was created by the Rabim, and therefore it should belong to the Rabim. And that's why the Rabim can take it, because it's as if they created that value. And since they created that value, they are also able to then take that Shevach because it really belongs to them. Ziri's position in theory is very appealing, but in practice is very difficult. Because how is it that you can take the Shevach, or how do you know what the Shevach is? Because a prior party might have come along already and taken the Shevach. So how do you know that you're taking the Shevach? How do you measure the Shevach? So in reality, it's very hard to have this din of Ziri come to fruition, because there's no standard measurement of what the Shevach is, or there's no institution that's telling you, yes, that this is the Shevach, or the Shevach was already taken. And so I agree with you that splitting between the Karen and the Shevach is not simple, in reality or in practicality, even though, again, Ziri in theory says that you should have to differentiate or can differentiate between them. It's not our Mishnah. Ha'ofechet ha'galal, b'rishut ha'rabim, v'uzak behen acher. If you are turning over the dung in the Rishut ha'rabim, and someone is injured by it, chayav b'nisko, you are responsible for the damage. V'ilo, kol ha'kodem, zacha lo'ktani. As opposed to the earlier part of our Mishnah, where it says that, both in the Tanakhama's position as well as Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's position, that whoever gets there first and takes it has a right to take it, that is absent in this last statement in the Mishnah. Now, why is it absent? Might be because of this exact machloka between Rav and Zeiri. By the case of Galal, as we just mentioned in the Balei Tosafot, there is no Shevach. There is no benefit to putting it out in the Rishut Rabim. So the only thing you have in this case of Galal is Keren. So for Zeiri, there's no Shevach to penalize. That's why the Mishnah doesn't mention that Kol HaKodem Ben Zachaben, because there's nothing to be Zoche in, because there's no benefit created by putting it on the Rishut HaRabim. On the other hand, this is a problem for Rav. Rav says when you confiscate both the Shevach and the Keren. Over here you have Keren. Why isn't that being confiscated? Or why doesn't the Mishnah also mention Kol HaKodem Ben Zachaben? Where it says, Tana L'Resha V'Adin L'Seifa. The Mishnah already revealed to us in the beginning of the Mishnah that this is the din. And that similar din applies in the latter half of the Mishnah, where it says, wait a minute, Vahatani Allah asurim mishum gezel. Doesn't our Mishnah say that they are asur mishum gezel, that you're not allowed to steal those items? Now, again, if you say like Zeiri, you could bifurcate the din and say that with regards to the principle or the item that you put out there, it's asur mishum gezel. On the other hand, with regards to the shevach, the benefit that's created, there you would say that it is mutar, kodo kodem zachaben. But for Rav, who says you're allowed to confiscate both the principal and the Shevach, then what is Asur Mishum Gezel? What is there in restriction against stealing if you're allowed to take or you have permission to take whatever's there? It says, Kiktani Asur Mishum Gezel, Akula Matnitan Koi. It says it's Asur Mishum Gezel, that's going on the entirety of the Mishnah, which means, Shekadam Vizacha, the one who went ahead and took the property from the Rishut HaRabim, once the guy put it out there, then if you steal from him or you take it away from him, that is called stealing. Mishum Gezel is not about the item that was actually placed in Rishut HaRabim. That Mishum Gezel is qualifying the statement that says whoever takes possession of it has a right to take possession of it. Once they take possession of it, that's the Mishnah says, Asurah Mishum Gezel. It becomes his fully, and therefore you can't take it away from him. Now, you might think that it's just Hefker. It's not really his. I mean, that the Beit Din just took it away from the other party. So maybe the whole reason here is to penalize the party who put it out there. So not that we really give you ownership when you take it, we simply want it away from the party who put it out there. So what the Mishnah tells you is, no, it's not simply that we're taking it away from that party. Whoever takes it really owns it, and it becomes his fully at that point in time. Where it says, V'alok Tani Hachi. The only problem with that explanation is that that's not exactly how it's written. It's not. Mutzi Tivno V'Kashod Rishut HaRabim L'Zvalim. Person who takes his tevin and kash, puts it out in the Rishut HaRabim for zevel, v'huzak behen acher, and another party is injured by them, chayav b'nisko, then is responsible for the damage. V'chol ha'kodem behem zacha, and whoever comes first and takes it has the right to do so. Mutar mishum gezel. And here it says that it's mutar mishum gezel. V'ofeichet ha'galal, the Rishut HaRabim, someone who turns over the dung in Rishut HaRabim, v'huzak behen acher, and another party is hurt by that or injured by that, chayav is responsible. Vasur mishum gezel. And there you're not allowed to take it because of gezel. So what you see over here is that it's not true that the issue of gezel applies to the whole Mishnah equally. It's asur mishum gezel is only in the latter part of the Mishnah, not in the first part of the Mishnah. And therefore this presents an issue for Rav. Because if the first part of the Mishnah is telling you that there's a bifurcation in the din between kodo kodem zacha and the fact that there's an iser of gezel, then that distinction can only be explained in Ziri, where there are two different dinim. But for Rav, where there's only a single din, that's problematic. Again, we tried to suggest that this Asur Mishum Gezel is a broad application to the one who took it. Now, it's really his. Where it says it doesn't work so well because the din of a Kodem Kodem Zachabahen, you're applying to the entire Mishnah, but the Isur and Heter of Gezel is differentiated between the different parts of the Mishnah. So now, Amar of Nachum Bayitzchak, Rav Nachum Bayitzchak comes to solve the problem in a different manner. It says, Galal Karamit? You're asking from Galal at the end of the Mishnah? Davar Shesh Bo Shevach Kansu Gufo, Mishum Shvacho. That when it comes to something that has Shevach, then there was an imposition on the Keren because of the Shevach. Davar Shein Bo Shevach Lo Kansu. If there's never any benefit, then there's never any penalty. What Rav Nachman Yitzchak says is that Rav explained to us the reasoning behind his position is that you take away or confiscate the Karen because of the Shevach. So that, what Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, that's not just theoretical. That is only when there is Shevach. If there is Shevach, then we confiscate the Karen. If there is no Shevach, then we can't confiscate the Karen. The latter part of the Mishnah, which talks about Galal, and again, we repeated this numerous times, I said she would come up again, is that putting Galal into the Reshut Rabim has no Shevach. There's no benefit to putting it out there. For that reason, Tosafot says it's not Birushut, you don't have permission to put it out there. And here, Rav Nachman Yitzchak is saying that Rav's penalty won't apply over here, because the Karen is the only thing that's there. There is no Shevach. Since there is no Shevach, you can't say I'm penalizing the Karen to the Shevach. There is no Shevach to say to a Shevach. And for that reason, the din in the latter part of the Mishnah is differentiated, and it's not a question on Rav, because you can't ask from the latter part of the Mishnah versus the earlier part of the Mishnah. They stand independently because of the difference in the nature of the items that you're putting out there. Now, Ibai Luhu. The Gemara now says, based on this, the Divi Omer Kansu Gufan Mishum Shvachan, meaning Rav, who believes that we penalize the Karen because of the Shevach, La Alter Kansinan, Alochi Maiti Shvacha Kansinan. Do we penalize him immediately in anticipation of the fact that there will be Shevach from it being left out there? Since it's potential to have Shevach, that's enough reason to penalize immediately and make the Karen into something that people can take. Is it only when it practically shows up? Once there is Shevach created in the Reshut Rabim, then and only then do we penalize the individual and give up his Karen. Tashma, Rezez, Midika Irinan Galal. The fact that the Gemara entertained a question from Galal on our Mishnah, which doesn't have Shevach at all, that shows you that we don't need Shevach in reality in order to confiscate the Karen. Where it says, Betizbura? Wait a minute. Is your proof really a good proof? Ki Irina and Galal, Mikame de Lishne Rav Nachman. The reason that we asked from Galal was before we had this answer of Rav Nachman Yitzchak that says that Galal has nothing to do with our case. The Bata de Shani Rav Nachman, after Rav Nachman Yitzchak told us that Galal is not relevant to this case, because even Rav agrees over there, there's no penalty, Mika and the Mirma Galal Klal. Then you can't really ask from Galal onto the other part of the Mishnah. You're trying to bring a proof from the fact that the Gemara entertained a question from Galal to the first part of the Mishnah. In the end, Rav Nachman Yitzchak says the question's not even relevant. You can't ask a question from Galal because Galal is a totally separate category in which there is no Shevach. And since there's no Shevach, there's no penalty. So how do you bring a proof from that to the fact that you don't need the Shevach in reality when the question itself was undermined because of this distinction drawn by Rav Nachman Yitzchak? So therefore, we have no conclusion from that statement or the fact that the Gemara entertained a question from Galal because the premise of the question was mistaken. And once we corrected that, there is no question from Galal. Where it says, Lema Kitanae. Let us say that this issue of compensating the Karen is actually a machloket Tanaim. Shtar shekatuv bo ribit, a person who loans money or lends money for interest. Obviously, it's asur to lend money for interest. And they draw up a shtar that includes the repayment of the principal as well as the interest that will accrue on the loan. Konsim oto ve'eno gover lo et hakeren ve'lo et haribit, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says we penalize him, and not only can he not collect the interest, which is what is asur, he also loses the ability to collect on the principal that he lent out. Chachamim omrim gover et hakeren ave lo et haribit. Chachamim say, no, we only penalize him with regards to the interest, which is the problematic part of it. We don't penalize him with regards to the Karen. Lema, Rav Damar ki Rabbi Meir. Let us say that Rav holds like Rabbi Meir, that we do, or we are Kones, the principal, unto the Davar Asur here, or the benefit that is garnered. Ziri Damar ki Rabbanan. And Ziri says we only penalize the benefit, or the part that is Asur, like the Rabbanan, who say you only penalize or take away the rebate over here. So, Amar lecha Rav. Rav says, Ana da amrei afilu rabbanan. I can even fit into the position of the rabbanan. Ad kan lo kami rabbanan hatam ela keren dibehetera. Over there, the reason that the rabbanan bifurcate the din is because the interest is asur, but the principal of the loan is not asur. And therefore they say the principal can be repaid, or the shtar is good for the principal, but not for the rebate, which is the thing that was done by isur. Avahacha, keren gufa kamazik. Over here, the damage or the dangers that are presented to the Reshut Rabim are from the object itself. Not only is it the Shevach that is the problem, but the Karen itself is the problem or the cause of the problem. It can cause the injury. It can be the problem in the Reshut Rabim. So even though technically we only worried about the Shevach or the benefit, we're trying to penalize you or dissuade you from doing this. If we take away the shevach, that should be enough. But here the Karen is also involved in the problem. And therefore, Rav says, even the Rabbanim might agree that over here, the Karen also could be confiscated. The Ziri Amar Lecha, Ziri says, I can propose to you, Ana Damrei Afilu Rabbi Meir. I can even fit into the position of Rabbi Meir. Ad kan lo kama Rabbi Meir hatam el demishat ktiva, the avad leishuma. Because at the time of the drawing up of the contract, the Isur is embedded in the contract, which is that the rebate and the principal are written together, and the whole package is now put into the single shtar. Of a hocha, in our case, miyemar demazik. It's not absolute or obvious that an Isur or damage would be caused. Meaning that in the case of the rebate, the Isur is the collection of the rebate. And that's exactly what the shtar evidences, is that you owe the money plus the interest. So the shtar itself is problematic because it contains within it the avera, or the fact that the avera will be done, which is the collection of the rebate. Then here, the shevach, or leaving it out of reshut rabim, is problematic, but it's only problematic in the end if it causes damage. And that is not a certainty that it will cause damage. So because of that, maybe over here, you would only penalize him for the shevach, and you wouldn't penalize the Karen, because the Karen is not guaranteed to be problematic or cause something that is problematic, an injury in this case. Tosafot makes some interesting points with regards to the shita of Rabbi Meir over here, as well as the shita of the Chachamim. The first of which is that Rabbi Meir says that we penalize the Malveh over here and say that if he lent with interest in the contract, not only does he lose the interest, but he also loses the principal. Tosafot comments on that and says, V'nir l'ri, sh'Rabbi Meir kones lahafsid achol, the gamrei. And he says that he wipes out the obligation or the loan completely. Even if the loveh agrees that he borrowed the money, and even if we have other edim that the transaction took place, the penalty is put in place here that he loses the principal repayment, irrespective of the obligation of the loveh to pay this to the malveh, or the fact that the loveh really borrowed the money. What's interesting from that, as Tosafot notes, is that it ends up that both the malveh and the loveh are in violation of lending or borrowing money with interest. Yet we only end up penalizing the malveh. And that means that for the loveh, we end up with a situation or circumstance in which chote niskar, that the person who was a sinner is actually benefiting. So the Balei Tosfot in the end say, well, it's a little bit of a lopsided sinning to benefit situation. In the case of the malveh, he sinned by collecting ribit, but he is the beneficiary of the sin, because the violation of ribit is what garners him that extra money from lending out with rebate. On the other hand, for the loveh who's in violation of the isur, he's not the beneficiary of the rebate. It might be, or you could argue that he only got the loan because he was willing to pay rebate, and therefore he's a beneficiary in that way. But in general, he was not the one who was gaining from the rebate, and therefore there's no reason or no way that we can penalize him. And even though, therefore, when we wipe out the loan, he is the beneficiary of that, that's not our primary purpose over here. Our primary purpose is to penalize the individual who, by sinning, was gaining materially from this, and that is the malveh. The other thing that Tosfot asks is, according to the shita of the Chachamim, who say that you're not allowed to collect the rebate, but you are allowed to collect the principal amount, he says that from the Gemara, it sounds like you're allowed to bring the shtar, and we look at the shtar as if the rebate doesn't exist in it, and then you have a right to collect the principal amount through the shtar. But Tosfot say, how is that possible? Why is this shtar kasher? Because here you have edim who signed on a shtar that had rebit in it, and edim who signed on a shtar with rebit are in violation of lotus simun. So now they have done something that is a monetary violation, which makes them into rishaim and psule edut. They're psule edut, then their edut and the shtar is meaningless, and now the shtar is worthless. So how are you collecting the principal amount with the shtar? But they started as pasul because they deemed signed them to something that was inappropriate and deems them rishaim, and therefore you no longer have a viable shtar to collect with. So the Balei Tosafot suggested first that maybe the document simply gave a total amount, but did not segregate between principal and interest, and therefore the edim were not aware of the fact that the amount here was inclusive of the interest, and that's why they were quote-unquote innocent in signing on the shtar. That's one possibility, but if that's the case, then it would also be hard for him to collect the principal, because if you haven't separated the amount, then how do we say that we dropped the rebate in the principal amount? Tosafot rejects that answer for that and other technical reasons, and then gives the following suggestions. V'yesh lomar, d'lo tisimun alav neshech, le'inshe b'malve v'love v'arev, mashmalahu. That people in general, with the restriction of lending with interest, think that that restriction only applies to the lender, the borrower, and the guarantor. But they don't really think it applies to the edim. And for that reason, the edim are not psulim over here. Not because they're not in violation. Not because they really should be pasul. But because the psul with regards to edut and rishaim has to do with people's perspective or perception of whether there's an iser here or not. In this case, the edim themselves think they're not doing any isur, even though there's a restriction for the malva, the lova, and the arev to be involved. They don't believe that the pasuk has application for them. And since they don't believe the pasuk has application for them, they're not really rishayim. They're not really acting in a manner to steal, quote-unquote, money, which would pasul them for edud, because they think it's mutar. They don't think there's any problem with it. So it's amazing chiddush. And Tosafot, that just because people don't think that it's wrong, that's enough of a reason to say that these individuals will be not classified as rishayim, even though they're in violation of that isur. Or here we add a deem that were under duress to be parties to this situation. So even though, again, they are kasher deem, and they are testifying to the fact that something happened over here, and they're not denying that, they're simply under duress to participate in this loan with interest against the Isura Torah. And so for that reason, they are innocent. They are not going to be held responsible for what took place, and they will not be deemed Rishaim. And for that reason, the shtar remains kasher. The Rosh over here suggests that the rebit, the interest that we're speaking about here, is rebit derabanan. And since the edim themselves are not gaining from the testimony, or they're not making off with any monetary benefit over here, therefore they're not made into Rishaim, because we're dealing with rebit derabanan in a place where there's no direct monetary benefit going to the edim. The Ksota Choshen, based on a Mordechai, wants to suggest over here that the reason the edim are okay on the shtar is because they only become rishayim after they've signed on the shtar with rebit in it. So when they signed this shtar, they were still edim ksheirim. They're only deemed to be rishayim once they've signed onto the shtar with interest, but that's after the fact. That's prospectively, but not retroactively. And therefore, they remain kasher edim with regards to this shtar, which was signed prior to their becoming Rishaim. And Tosafot in the end concludes, Romari, the halacha k'rabbanan, and in this machloka, the halacha is like the Rabbanan, even though we generally have a principle that kaimalan k'Rabbi Meir b'gzerotav, that we pass on like Rabbi Meir with regards to gzerot that he puts in place. Tosafot says that's b'gzerotav v'lo ben k'nasotav. That's true when it's talking about a decree or a gzera that's put in place. It's not talking about penalties or fines, which is the situation over here. And therefore, the halacha is like the chachamim, and he says the Bahag, the Baal Halachot Gedolot, also agrees that over here that the halacha is like the Rabbanan and not like Rabbi Meir. So Gemara says, Lema kahane tanae. Let us say that it's like these tanaim. Hamotzi tibno v'kasho the reshut rabim v'zvalim. Someone who took out his temen and kash into reshut rabim to turn it into a zevel. V'uzak ben acher chayav v'nisko. If someone else is injured by it, you're responsible for that damage. Cholakode mehem zacha. Whoever takes it first can take it first. Vasurim mishum gezel, and it's asur because of theft. Shimon Gamliel omer kol mekalkulim b'shut rabim. And again, our Mishnah, Shimon Gamliel, says anything that is done that is detrimental or is problematic in the shut rabim veziku, and they cause damage, chayavin l'shalem, you have to pay restitution, compensation to the individuals who are injured. Kol kodem ben zacha, whoever gets there first gets to take it. Umutarim mishum gezel. And there is no problem of gezel. Ha gufa kasho. That seems to be internally inconsistent. Amar kolda kodem hem zacha. You said whoever gets there first gets to keep it. But dar kamar asurim mishum gezel. Then right afterwards you say it's a problem because of gezel. Ella lav hachi kamar. Isn't this what is being said here? The difference between the Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel revolves around this issue of gezel. And what is being said, or the machloket between them, is in the following manner. That whoever gets there first is able to confiscate or take away the shevach. And the Isur of Gezel is on the principal amount. This is what we had suggested before in the explanation of the Mishnah, that you'll bifurcate the din between the principal and the shevach. That would be the position of the Tanakama, and that is what Ze'iri was suggesting. Even the principal amount itself, or the item itself, Kol Kodem Hem Zacha, he is entitled, anybody who gets there first gets to take it, and that's why it's Mutar Mishum Gezel. There is no problem of Gezel. The Gemara says, L'Zi'iri Vadai Tanayahi. For Zi'iri, this machlok between the Tanakam Rabbi Shimon Gamliel can only be explained in the manner by which it is a machloket Tanaim, and Zi'iri will have to hold like the Tanakama and not like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. The Rav Milema Tanayahi. According to Rav, you're not forced to say it is a machloket Tanaim. Because Amalecha Rav, the Kuli Alma Kansu Gufan Mishum Shvachan. Everybody agrees. That means both the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believe that everything that's put out there is subject to this penalty. That means both the Shevach and the Karen are exposed to people taking them, and they can take them. And they're arguing over here about if someone approaches us to ask us what the din is, how do we paskin for them? So what we're suggesting now is that the Tanakama says if you show up in Beit Din and ask, what am I allowed to do here? Beit Din will paskin, you're allowed to take the Shevach, but you're not allowed to take the guf or the Karen. Even though technically if you do take it, you will not be responsible or will not be considered Gezel. Nevertheless, if you ask us beforehand, we're going to tell you, don't take it. And then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, if you come to us and ask us what the loch is, we'll tell you the loch is that you can take the Shevach, and the loch is you can take the Karen as well. Ditmar, Ravuna Amar Rav, Halacha Bein Morim Kain, because we have from Ravuna in the name of Rav that the halacha is this way, which is that everything can be confiscated, Bein Morim Kain, and we don't publicly announce this. Now, there is a distinction here. Generally, when we say halacha vein morim kein, it means that we don't say this publicly, but if an individual comes, we will tell him the halacha. Over here, it's even if an individual comes, we won't tell him the halacha is such, but rather, we say that after the fact, if he's taken it already, we're not going to take it back from him, we're not going to force him to disgorge it. On the other hand, if he asks us, can he take it, we will say, you can take the shevach, but you cannot take the karen. Rav Adarbava amar halacha umorim kein. Rav Adarbava says the halacha is this way, and you're allowed to paskin, meaning that you can openly or explicitly say you're allowed to take the shevach, and you're allowed to take the karen. Ini, is that really true? Baravuna afkar chushle. Some individual put out his shelled barley into the street in order to dry it out. Ravuna, in order to penalize him, was mafkirit and said whoever wants to can come and grab them. So there you see Ravuna's paskining publicly, that you're allowed to not only confiscate the shevach, but the karen as well. Vadababa Afker Slikusuta. He, in a similar vein, where someone put out into the Rishut Rabim, Rashi brings two interpretations as to what this Slikusata is either Itzureit Marim, Shasume and Shvechar, it's the residual after they've been pressed to make date beer, the dregs that are left over afterwards, that's what it's speaking about. Lishna Achrina is Shmarei Shechart Marim. It is the actual sediment that is in the date beer. That's what we're speaking about here. And this person put them out into the Rishut Rabim in order to dry it out and to be for feed for the animals. And Rav Adarbava said that you're doing something to ruin the Rishut Rabim or you don't have permission to do this. I'm mafkir them. Anybody wants to come and take them. Bishlama Rav Adarbava kishmate. Rav Adarbava is consistent with his psak. He says halacha morim came and he's paskening like his halacha. El Rav Huna lema hadarbe. Wait, Rav Huna is paskening publicly that you can take all of these items against what he said before, that it's halacha vein morim kein. So maybe Rav Huna retracted his position. Where he says, no, hanu mutrin havu. These individuals were warned numerous times, meaning that Beit Din already told this individual to clean his act up, to get the stuff out of the Rishut Rabim, and he failed to comply. So since he's a recurring offender, here Rav Huna basically took the matters into his own hands. Or basically, this is an extra judicial type of psak. The halacha is, you're right, you can't be mafkirit. But here, this person is ignoring the instructions of Beit Din. Rav Huna went ahead and said, we're mafkirit stuff in order to penalize him for not complying with the requests of Beit Din. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph.